During the First World War, Great Britain and Germany, the two great rival sea powers, fought for supremacy at sea. This is the story of a deadly encounter between a German U-boat and a Royal Navy Q-ship. A hazy sky over a rugged coastline.
Deep beneath the waters of the Channel Islands and the northern coast of France lies one of the great unsolved maritime mysteries. It concerns the alleged battle between a secret Royal Navy decoy ship and a German submarine.
Divers putting on their equipment.
For decades, divers and historians have searched to discover the fate of both ships and their fascinating story. But no one has come any closer to solving the mystery.
Sunlight shining into water. The hunt for Lady Olive and the German submarine. The sunlight fades and the water falls into darkness.
Leading the most recent search is a team of specialist divers and underwater filmmaker Carl Taylor.
Now, if we can find the German submarine UC-18, then it could reveal the truth. And we should at least be able to find the Lady Olive. She was part of a secret Royal Navy program of decoy vessels called Q-ships that were designed to destroy submarines. But hunting for lost shipwrecks is like a detective story. The only problem is that the evidence from both these vessels lies at the bottom of the sea, and we don't know where. All we have is a starting point somewhere between Guernsey and Jersey.
Jersey and Guernsey form part of the Channel Islands and sit nestled in the northern coast of France. Although British, they have strong historical links with France and, as you would expect, a rich maritime history. The island's unique location has acted as a maritime trading point for millennia. For the last 2,000 years, it has also become the resting place to thousands of shipwrecks and many lives. The rich topography and large tides make the area a haven for ocean life. But it also presents its dangers, especially to divers. With a 10-meter tidal range, it can produce some of the strongest currents on the planet.
Crewman's accounts, they just basically went south. They headed.
The dive team searching for the wrecks holds a meeting to discuss the project and their research.
12 pounder, 3 inch, it's not a huge shell.
Where it had been, if it had been spotted. So all these articles.
They explore various theories as to the fate of the Royal Navy Q ship, the Lady Olive, and the German submarine, UC-18.
A boat through a periscope.
In the ensuing battle, it is documented that on the morning of February the 19th, 1917, the German submarine UC-18 attacked the Lady Olive from a range of 3 miles. Eventually, she comes close enough to inspect her prey, only to then come under sudden counterattack from the decoy ship's hidden guns. According to certain history books, UC-18 took severe damage to her conning tower and her gun. It is suggested that the Lady Olive has also been holed by torpedo or gunfire, and both vessels were said to have sunk some 8 miles west of Jersey. Yet neither have ever been found.
Thomas Turmert.
One of the problems with historical data is that in the heat of battle, coordinates and facts can be misconstrued. There are some elements of a story that can be corroborated, such as the fact that both vessels were lost, and we have to rely on the accounts of the survivors. What's particularly interesting about this battle is that if it is true, it is the only known naval encounter between a ship and a submarine where both sank each other.
During World War I, the Admiralty was so desperate for results against the deadly onslaught of German submarines that they offered the crew that sank one a bounty, equivalent to nearly £50,000 in today's money. A figure that could potentially lead crew to embellish or completely fabricate a kill in order to earn the prize. Could this be the case with the surviving crew of the Lady Olive? The German submarine fleet was so successful that it was close to tipping the balance of the war in favor of Germany. By the end of 1916, German submarines had been responsible for sinking over 2,000 British and Allied ships, totaling 3.6 million tons, which crippled imports of food and supplies, hampering Britain's war efforts.
The British were becoming desperate. More ships were being sunk than could be built. The Royal Navy needed something to counter the effectiveness of the German U-boats. And it was from this that they came up with the secret program called Q-ships. Essentially, these were decoy ships, often small cargo ships that were requisitioned by the Royal Navy and heavily armed. They were designed to lure an unsuspecting German U-boat closer for an attack. When a U-boat approached, the crew of the Q-ship would fake an abandoned ship to bring their attackers within range of their own guns. At the last minute, when the enemy was in range, the hidden guns would be uncovered, swung outboard, the naval ensign would be raised, and fire at the submarine.
The only problem was, this tactic wasn't as effective as the British had hoped, and Q-ships often suffered massive damage or sunk while their enemy escaped. UC Class II submarines were certainly an exceptional adversary. They were the most effective model of wartime submarine ever built.
A spinning graphic of a UC Class II submarine in the International Maritime Museum in Hamburg, Germany.
Carl travels to Hamburg Maritime Museum to learn more about the submarine that the team of divers are looking for.
The main purpose of this submarine type was to lay mines, and that was the number one task. Quite some of these submarines were taken by their own mines. This type, UC-2, has a huge bow
raised up for the mines.
Raised up for the mines, where the mines are stored in.
Mm-hmm.
But also for the front torpedo tubes.
And then there's also...
And the gun, the gun. Yes, of course, which is an important weapon for a submarine in World War I.
Yes.
So it was also no weapon against the submarine.
Mm.
What to do? And then the Royal Navy started to find solutions. Q-ships, or in German terminology, U-boot fallen. That means submarine trap. And when the submarine then coming closer and the better firepower of a surface ship tried to sink the submarine. They were both a sort of heroes for their countries.
What we do know with UC-18 is that after a successful three-month campaign, like many other German submarines, she just never returned home. What we don't know is that if in the battle with the Lady Olive, she sustained damage and potentially sank 100 miles away, or maybe she was even damaged by a mine elsewhere. Unfortunately, everything at this stage is hypothetical, and what we really need is evidence.
Someone climbs onto a small boat.
The team turned to renowned wreck hunter and commercial diver, Richard Keane. Richard has been diving these waters for over 50 years. And with Fred Shaw, he discovered the long-lost wreck of the Stella, which was missing since 1899. As well as the Stella, Richard found a nearly 2,000-year-old Roman wreck. His wealth of experience could prove valuable in discovering the fate of the Lady Olive and UC-18.
The first two things to remember when researching a shipwreck: is don't believe anything you read in a book, especially if it isn't indexed and referenced. The second is with original documents, always remember that they are written to explain the loss of a vessel to a superior.
The team have also enlisted the help of local maritime historian John Paul Falaise to learn as much as possible about the Q-ship Lady Olive. Meanwhile, the search begins. Richard and members of the team prepare to head out to sea.
Good morning, out for the day was fine.
A wave in the wake of the moving boat, a screen with a map, then a hand turning the wheel. Search year one. The vessel speeds across the water with clear skies above.
They will begin by gradually scanning a large area surrounding the alleged battle location.
These may be the same numbers you've got.
Yeah. There's another one here that's unknown as well, but that's still too close to Jersey.
To assist them, they will be using traditional sonar and something called side scan, which can help build a picture of the seabed to a range of 250 meters either side of the search vessel.
A graphic showing the seabed being scanned.
So you want to get the side scan.
Connected up to a laptop, the side scan, which is a small torpedo-shaped device, is lowered into the water at the side of the vessel.
Side scanning is certainly an advantage, but literally just a drop in the ocean when it comes to a potential search area.
One of the search crew watches the laptop screen while the side scan's pulled along through the water. Someone walks down some steps carrying a large plastic case at a dock.
Over the following months, they cover a huge area surrounding the historical location of the now almost legendary battle. During their fifth search, and within a few kilometers of the presumed battle, some wreckage marks on the sonar.
It's quite a big shadow.
Yeah, that's a strong shadow.
These two are the highest, that one's slightly lower, but there's a gap between the two.
The side scan is pulled in as the vessel circles around, and members of the crew watch a monitor.
Definitely a wreck, first count. Not standing very high, only a couple of metres high.
Yeah.
Wearing a red hat, Richard squints as he drives the vessel.
I'm lowering it down.
Come on, let's try.
There's some in here, look.
No, yes,
see that? Some. That's definitely a wreckage.
The discovery looks promising, but dive team leader Mike Page believes the wreckage to be too small to be a German submarine or the Lady Olive.
For a long while now, fishermen have been reporting the UC-18 in this area, which ties in with the historic location. Looking at the scans, the site seems to be too small to be either the UC-18 or the Lady Olive. But there's only one way to be certain, and that's to dive her.
Mike, who's a white balding man with glasses, puts on his diving kit.
But at 63 metres, it's a deep dive, requiring specialist training and gases.
One by one, the divers step off the boat laden with oxygen tanks.
They begin their descent into the inky black gloom. They are both excited and apprehensive as to what awaits them. Upon arrival at the seabed, Carl is confronted with a cloud of dust. As Mike and Nathan secure the safety line to what appears to be a piece of wreckage on the sea floor.
One diver shines a torch.
Fortunately, this quickly clears to reveal the broken remains of a shipwreck. But it's not what they're looking for.
A school of fish drift by the wreckage.
A submarine should remain largely intact due to its strong pressure hull. And this vessel is too small to be the Lady Olive. The dive reveals this to be a small cargo coaster called the Dromore, sunk by the submarine UC-70 in May 1917.
The divers climb back on the search vessel.
Unfortunately, it is not the wreck with our corpse.
The crew pull a diver on board.
Just a shame it's not the right wreck.
So not the wreck we're looking for then?
No.
So if not that, what is it?
It's a little coaster. Probably the Dromore.
One big boiler.
Yeah, one big boiler, single cylinder engine. So yeah, probably Dromore, sunk by UC-70, I think it was, in the First World War.
Further dives confirmed that this is the wreckage of the Dromore. It sits close to the alleged battle site of UC-18 and the Lady Olive, approximately 8 miles away from her historically recorded position. And although an interesting find, it's not the submarine or Q-ship that they are looking for. But over the winter, local wreck historian John Paul Falaise has some important news that could help this search.
Here is the Lloyd's Registry.
Mm-hmm.
And also, very importantly, her number. This number stays with the vessel for its whole life. You can trace back previous owners, previous names, who it was built for and where it's built.
Oh, so she wasn't born as the Lady Olive then?
No, she wasn't. She's actually launched as a Tees Trader.
And that's an interesting name. Tees Trader sounds very much like a commercial vessel.
She was 200 feet long, or 60 metres,
mm-hmm.
31.5 feet wide, or 9.5 metres,
mm-hmm.
and 12.2 deep, or 3.7 metres.
Have you managed to find any plans of the whole ship?
I'm still working on that, but what I have found is this image here. So this is the Yorkshire coast.
Right.
So this was the sister ship to the Tees Trader.
Oh, wow. By all accounts, this is identical to the Lady Olive. Now, obviously, the Lady Olive was taken away from being a commercial vessel by the Royal Navy to become a Q-ship. She would have been armed.
She would have been armed. And I've also got some images here. So this was a similar Q-ship.
OK.
So this actually shows you the guns and how they hid the guns. This is the 4-inch, the large gun.
The large gun. And these look slightly smaller, these ones hidden below the deck here.
So we know she had 4 12-pounder guns hidden away as well.
Where might we have found those guns?
Approximately here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the others would have been spread out over the ship to give good range.
OK, so that's interesting. So this is where UC-18's fatal damage would have occurred to the Lady Olive. Well, I find it fascinating because, I mean, as a 60 metres, or as it says here as well, 200 feet long ship with all those guns, it's incredible that we can't find anything anywhere near the historical location.
Richard also returns with copies of documents from the London National Archives. But after hours poring through them, the trail goes cold.
I haven't found anything conclusive that the Lady Olive sunk the UC-18. In fact, there's one document that says it was sunk by the Medea, a naval vessel, nearly a month afterwards. I even found a book marked secret which contained the amount of money paid to the Q-ships that sunk German submarines, where the crew and the skipper got £1,000 as a bounty, which was a lot of money in those days. It could be the UC-18 escaped, but when the crew of the Lady Olive abandoned ship and took to their lifeboats, we know that they decided to row south towards the French coast.
The documents Richard obtained reveal that the crew spent 36 hours in 2 open rowing boats, with many of the men almost succumbing to hypothermia. One of the lifeboats was eventually rescued off the coast of France by the French destroyer Le Dunois.
Chateau de Vincennes.
Carl travels to Paris to meet his researcher, who has arranged special permission from the French military archives, allowing them to view the original logbooks from the destroyer, Le Dunois.
So, Carl, we have the Journal du Bord du Dunois.
This is the original logbook from the Dunois.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the pages concern the 20th February 1917.
This is the day after the battle with the Lady Olive and the UC-18.
Exactly. The afternoon between 4 and 8, they were in service ordinaire à la mer, la bordée de car au poste de veille, and aperçu un sous-marin ennemi mis au poste de combat.
Right. So the Dunois actually got into a battle, saying it's fighting a submarine.
They were in emergency and mise au poste de combat, so they were in fighting situation. Mm. But they started to rescue the sailors from the cruise ship.
From the Lady Olive.
The Lady Olive.
Yeah.
Okay.
At the same time. So this is all in the same period.
Yeah, exactly. They continue the rescue, continue le sauvetage des naufragés par la baleinière 2, so they used the lifeboat and they left the zone.
And does it give us any indication of that zone, of where this took place, where they rescued the crew from the Lady Olive?
So this one is not so precise, because they are navigating between Cherbourg and Île-de-Batz, so it's not very precise for you and your research. But it's interesting because we find another document which tells us the same story, exactly the same, signed by the same officer.
The same officer from the Dunois.
Yeah, Monsieur Beaufils. And it starts like that. So, en vue, Triagoz et les Sept Îles, bonne surveillance.
So, in view of Triagoz and Sept Îles.
Yeah.
But that is way over here. This is the area here.
Yeah.
Triagoz and Sept Îles here. But this is fascinating, because if the rescue took place here, as it details in these logbook documents, well, this is very different to where the historical location of the battle was meant to have taken place. The battle between the Lady Olive and the German submarine UC-18 was alleged to have taken place way over here.
Yeah.
Now, if they sank the Lady Olive in this position, and then they sailed south in their life rafts, in the baleinière, it is impossible for them to arrive at this position in the baleinière. Even with strong tidal currents east to west here, it's way too far to the west. So this changes everything, because this means to me that the battle could not have taken place here. It must have been further to the west. Not only does it give us a location of the rescue, but it also talks about a submarine being in the vicinity at the time.
Clearly, there was a fight, and there was still another submarine in the area. So
amazing. Well, this is fantastic information. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So could this submarine have been UC-18 following the crew in hope of sinking a rescue vessel? The vital clue that the Dunois logbooks have revealed is the rescue location. Richard also delivers news from France. He's obtained some important documents.
I've had these documents sent to me by a friend in France, and they describe how the rest of the crew from the Lady Olive were rescued by the French fishing vessel Cirrus, and this is their report taken by the French in Paimpol. So now we have two accounts that the lifeboats were found far further to the west, a lot further than we would have expected. The crew also describe the sinking of the UC-18, saying that she was sunk instantly, going down almost vertically.
An aerial view of Fort Nelson.
Richard and Carl travel to Fort Nelson Royal Armouries in Portsmouth to discover more about the potential damage the Lady Olive's guns could have inflicted on UC-18.
What sort of damage could shells like this inflict from 100 metres, which was the alleged battle?
Well, in gunnery terms, 100 metres is virtually point blank.
Right.
So because if you think about these, the range is around 10,000 metres.
10,000? That's 10 kilometres range.
Yeah,
so I see what you mean. So literally 100 metres is point blank range.
The muzzle velocity of the 12-pounder, so this one, is around 670 metres per second.
If that went into a conning tower, apart from the explosion, that would shell shock everybody in that area.
And I think anything loose within the conning tower, loose fittings, it's going to create shrapnel bouncing around.
My concern is that we haven't found the wreck. We should be able to find a submarine because it's a 50-metre-long pressure vessel. And because we're not finding the submarine, you know, did she have a wounding shot and manage to get away? We know that she never got back to Belgium.
Armed with a wealth of new information, the team decide to move their search area much further to the west to several yet-to-be-identified wrecks.
The crew set out in the search vessel. Search year two. Rays of sunlight shine down on the calm sea.
They now have more detail regarding the structure and weaponry of the Lady Olive.
Mike lowers the side scan into the water.
And with the evidence from France, a more promising search area.
They watch the scan on the laptop.
Coming up!
But the question remains, whether UC-18 was sunk or escaped from the Lady Olive.
A seagull swoops across the water.
Let's go up, and then turn round and come back for another swim.
After weeks of scanning, they eventually discover a strong side scan image, indicating significant wreckage, approximately 12 miles west of the historical position of the alleged battle. The wreckage area is also much larger, giving the team hope that they have discovered the Lady Olive. But at 68 meters deep, these will present more challenging dives.
A valve being tightened, then a pile of oxygen tanks. The crew look apprehensive. The divers put on their equipment.
They will conduct a 25-minute search before beginning a one-hour gradual decompression back to the surface.
In montage, Mike checks his oxygen. Spare gas tanks are clipped onto their suits. Then a diver steps off the vessel into the water. An aerial view of the boat and another diver making a splash as he jumps in. On the seabed, one diver shines a torch across a large cylindrical tank and some wreckage.
The large engine block and boilers reveal vital clues.
A diver swims between two vast lengths of metal.
Further exploration indicate this is not the Lady Olive.
A tangle of parts and the curved end of a boat.
This ship has three large boilers.
One of the boilers in a faint blue light, then a long metal rod with a propeller at the end.
A primary clue also comes from the large propeller and its aperture guard. Through researching historical photographs, they find a match. This propeller's uncommon design and its specific aperture guard match a ship called the Saint Philippe. A wreck that's location had, until now, remained unconfirmed. The Saint Philippe was a large French cargo vessel that was sunk by the German submarine UB-39 in November 1916, with the loss of 9 lives. Like many wrecks discovered, she is several miles from her historically recorded position.
It's like we're going back to the drawing board. But I've been doing some more research and I've come across something quite interesting. I found a lady in Cornwall who says she's the great niece of a crew member from the Lady Olive. And she says that she has in her possession his handwritten diaries.
Carl knocks on the door of a quaint house made of grey bricks.
Henrietta?
Hello,
Hi, Carl.
Come
nice
in.
To meet you. So, Henrietta, What was your relation to James Simpson?
He was my granny's brother, so he was my great-uncle.
And how did these diaries come to be in your possession?
They kept everything that got handed down from my granny to my mum and then to us when my mum died.
And it's incredible because this diary is fascinating for me. This is James's original handwritten diaries. It's over 105 years old. So here it says, she fired two shots. One plugged us in the engine room and the other passed over us. Then she got the greatest surprise and she got salvo into her. Salvo's ammunition.
Right, I wondered that.
Conning tower almost blown to bits. Now that's really interesting. This is the conning tower on a submarine here. Yeah. They're saying that they largely destroyed this area of the submarine. Now the other interesting part in the diaries is obviously the Lady Olive consequently sunk. It also mentions about their rescue by Le Dunois destroyer.
I really like that bit because that's the human interest bit. They've been there 36 hours, apparently, according to my granny, singing hymns, but we'll never know. And he had his Bible, apparently, according to my granny. So she liked the story, but this is what I was told. And then really lovely about the French picking them up and giving them stew and port wine, and he felt giddy after the port wine.
After 36 hours in freezing cold February in an open rowing boat as well, I bet they welcomed
that. I think he said good old Frenchies, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these are photos of James here?
These are James, yeah. He would have been 19 when these were taken.
That's obviously James there in his Navy uniform there and there. And here he is with some colleagues.
They were on the Lady Olive with him and they were his mates, so they had that photo taken together.
And what happened to James after the Lady Olive?
Oh, it's really sad. They went out and they were torpedoed, so they all went down.
So unfortunately he was killed.
So he was killed.
A year later after Lady Olive incident.
Yeah, it's really sad because he keeps saying, my luck, I'll be all right, Mum, I'll be all right, Mum, all through the letters, I'll be okay.
Black and white photos of James Simpson.
She said when she got the telegram, she said, I turned my face to the wall and said, my son, my son.
Right.
And she was a really dignified Victorian, but they were all going through it.
Unfortunately, no one knows for sure whether UC-18 was actually sunk by the Lady Olive. I'm not 100% sure we're going to find the submarine. We'll have to wait and see.
I mean, such distances, I really... Well, good luck.
Thank you.
I hope you get something.
A Guernsey flag flapping in the wind.
What really interests me is that in none of the accounts does it mention any sight of land. And if we take a look here, so here is the historical location of the battle. And right next to it, here is where we found the Dromore. And then over here is where we found the St. Philippe. Now, the distance from the historical location to Jersey is about 8 to 10 miles. And the distance from that location to the Rochedouves Lighthouse, and also from there, would be about 12 or so miles. Now, what's interesting about this is that no one in any account has mentioned any sight of land or any sight of the Rochedouves Lighthouse. Now, the Rochedouves Lighthouse here would have had a radius or a beam of light that would have been visible to a range of 20 miles. And I've checked with the lighthouse authorities, and they said that that lighthouse was operational during World War I.
The Rochedouves Lighthouse is a huge structure, guiding ships away from a dangerous reef. At the time, in 1917, it was 58 meters tall, and its light would have had a range of at least 15 nautical miles, easily visible at 7 a.m. on February the 19th for any ship in range.
So if they were inside this circle, you would have expected that someone would have noted seeing the Rochedouves Lighthouse. Now, the other thing that's been bothering me is if we take UC-18's starting point at her base here in Zeebrugge, she would have been travelling down the channel, along here, down the Western Channel, around here, and around to the Bay of Biscay, which was her main operating area. Now, that correlates really, really well with all of the attack points. They all kind of form a pattern on that line of travel. So why would she have deviated and come so far here easterly in towards the Channel Islands to attack the Lady Olive at that position? It just doesn't make sense. And on the 16th of February 1917, she left her base, and on the 18th of February, the day before the attack on the Lady Olive, she sunk a ship called the Netherton just here. Based on the fact that we know that the crew of the Lady Olive were rescued in this area here by the Dunois, we know of the sinking of the Toftwood, the Amadei, the Aurelia, in this sort of cluster here, my thinking is that we now should be looking much, much further to the west, right out here in this area.
They step onto the search vessel.
This is where she supposedly sunk. So, you know, it looks like she's out to the west somewhere.
Yeah.
All this area is prime French fishing ground.
Do you know anyone you can speak to?
Yeah. In fact, the boat in front of us was probably be quite helpful because he fishes down this part of the world.
Yeah. What would be ideal is if we can find out from fishermen if there's any hookies. Uncharted or hookies that they've tangled up in there that we can investigate.
Yep. But it's getting deeper water.
Absolutely.
The dive team hold another meeting to discuss these latest theories and consider if it's possible that the Lady Olive could be this far to the west. Richard also obtains several marks from fishermen of unknown wrecks in that area. As the winter prevents further diving, they put their ideas to maritime archaeologist Thomas Turmoot.
It is a good theory. If they find the Lady Olive, then there is a small chance that they could locate UC-18. The problem is that the Lady Olive sank 2 hours after UC-18 submerged. But if the Lady Olive did cause immediate and fatal damage to UC-18, then both vessels should not be that far apart. On the other hand, if it is a false claim, then UC-18 could be many miles away, and perhaps not even this area of the channel. The only thing we know for certain is that UC-18 left its base in Zeebrugge on the 16th of February 1917. After the U-boat had left its base, nothing was ever heard of her and her crew again.
With a wealth of new information, the team moved their search area significantly further to the west, deep into French waters, and nearly 50 miles from the original historical location.
Search year 3. The vessel speeds across the deep blue waters with faintly cloudy skies above.
Over several weeks, they conduct many scans.
So we've got a really good image on clear view. That's quite a distinctive result on that one in terms of the structure shape there on the clear view sonar. Very distinctive ship shape there. You can see the structure, shadow rising up in various places. So whatever that is, it's actually in pretty good condition looking at that. And no one knows what this wreckage is.
A rope being unwound, then the search vessel leaving the dock. The boat leaves a trail of white water behind. On board, the stepladders closed away in the floor of the deck.
In the following weeks, they decide to try a simple technique of dropping a camera down to the wreckage locations.
This is going to be a bit hit and miss, and there's a very real risk of snagging this and losing the lock. But this drop cam is going to require a lot less logistics than sending two dive teams nearly 40 miles from base.
A buoy is attached to a rope.
Right, torches ready, there's a GoPro ready.
They drop one of the cameras overboard and it starts to sink. crew feed the rope over the side of the boat, while the camera shows murky green water turning to blue. The camera reaches the seabed.
The first drop reveals nothing. Just barren seabed. The second drop hints at some wreckage.
They pull one of the cameras back up.
But then, nothing.
The cameras dropped into the water. A faint ridge appears in the cloudy water.
On their third drop, they find something. And at first glance, it looks like a submarine.
The weight on the end of the rope touches something hard with uniform straight lines along its surface.
But on the following camera drops, it becomes apparent that this is the hull of a ship.
A jagged piece of metal and a fish swimming by.
It appears that whatever sank here ended her journey to the seabed, inverted. Only diving this site and finding the engine block, boilers and armaments could lead to a positive ID, potentially as the Lady Olive. They move to another location with wreckage, just a few miles to the north. The first two camera drops don't reveal anything at all.
They drop the camera into the water. Bubbles whiz by the camera as it descends.
And on the third attempt, the equipment becomes snagged in something on the seabed.
The boy on the end of the rope is submerged. The crew tries to reach it with a long metal pole.
They manage to pull it free. They decide not to risk losing the footage or the equipment again.
So when we were on the boat, we immediately went to the footage to see what we snagged on. And you can see here, there's something on the seabed there, just there. It looks like a bit of mechanical gearing or something. But what we didn't notice was this. When I rewind the clip right back to the beginning, as the camera is descending, take a look at this. There. There is something on the seabed, just sort of out of shot there. It's upside down at the moment because the camera is spinning and rotating as it's descending. There it is again. There, you can see it there. Now that looks like something long and tubular. Could that be a submarine? Or is that just a bit of wreckage from a ship on the seabed?
The dive team meet to review the footage.
So, gentlemen, what do you think that might be?
They load an oxygen tank onto the search vessel.
The team decide they should investigate the site further and make plans for a deep dive.
Loading more tanks of oxygen onto the boat, the crew reel in the dock lines, then head out to the harbour. They pass a small lighthouse, then out at sea, the crew checks the diving equipment.
If there's a problem, what colours you're going to use? If it's a yellow one, and it'll be like a fluorescent yellow one that comes up, then that means we've got a problem, sent down the emergency tank.
The sun's bright in the sky as they head to the search area.
Could this dive be the culmination of years of searching? Or will it be just another false trail?
There's a GPS screen on the vessel.
Right, let's go for it.
the anchors thrown into the water.
Hoping to make the discovery, Carl prepares his ultra-low-light camera.
The bulky camera has a large lens. The crew put on their diving equipment and check the oxygen tanks. There are serious expressions on the crew's faces as one diver's suited up, then a spare oxygen tank is clipped onto a metal hoop. One by one, the divers step off the back of the search vessel into the calmly rippling water. There are buoys bobbing around on the surface when the last diver steps off, then an aerial view of sunlight glistening across the inky blue sea. Plumes of bubbles float up from the divers' oxygen masks as they descend into the murky depths. One of the crew gazes out from the search vessel, and a blue and white flag flutters in the breeze.
Out of the gloom, a shape reveals itself. Incredibly, it is a submarine, lain undisturbed and unseen for over a century.
The submarine's almost completely intact.
The divers must now operate with extreme care and respect for the site. If this is UC-18, it is a war grave. Her gun points to the southeast, matching the attack on the Lady Olive.
Torchlight shines across the outer hull.
There are remains of mines in two of the six mine tubes, and the proportions of the wreck are as expected for a UC Class II submarine.
The divers swim alongside the rusted shell of the submarine.
The divers must remain vigilant as clumps of trawler netting surround and rise up from the stern. They continue a thorough survey of the site, hoping that the wreck will reveal more secrets.
There's a gun turret and a school of fish swimming by the conning tower.
At over 70 meters, they can't afford to spend a great deal of time at this depth and must begin their ascent and long decompression.
The divers arrive back at the search vessel and climb onto the boat.
Look, incredible. World War I submarine laying on the seabed. That was the best dive of my life.
Carl watches another diver climb aboard.
That was super.
How was that then?
Dive of a decade, no.
That was. I mean, you know, diving all over the world, and that is just, you know, more people have been to the moon than have seen that.
Oh, unbelievable.
Seeing a World War I submarine never seen on the seabed.
Yeah, brilliant dive. Just wish I had more time.
Mike's beaming with joy while Carl wipes his face, then lets out a breath. The search vessel's hurtling across the sea.
Still elated from the discovery, the team must now focus their attention to the archaeological aspects of identification. The divers know that the propellers of nearly all World War I German submarines were engraved with their operating number. And this becomes the focus of the next dive. While Carl documents the discovery, team member Nathan Martell begins the process of trying to formally identify the wreck. After nearly 20 minutes of exhausting work, he has managed to scrape over 100 years of corrosion from the starboard propeller and finally reveals an engraving. Hoping to see UC-18, the inscription reads UC-RES. It transpires that this is a reserve propeller, most likely a replacement fitted after damage to the original.
Divers follow flashing lights on a rope, then climb back on the search vessel.
Started chipping away where I thought it was. No markings. I was like, oh, yeah. Move to the next one. No. Went to a third one. There's still nothing. I was like, right, start from the scratch. Starting chipping away. Finally, I saw the writer. I saw UC, chipping a bit more, and then saw an R, an E, an S.
Yeah. Could you tell us if Nathan got an idea on the prop, please?
Writing, but no numbers at all. Over.
No numbers at all.
You know, you're a long way from home. You need good conditions because you cannot afford to have any mishaps or accidents.
The risk of decompression illness increases significantly with consecutive days of deep dives. But the divers decide to press on with the identification process. They inspect the damage to the submarine, including an obvious shell hole on the starboard side. There is also significant shell damage to the base of the conning tower.
A diver puts their hand in the hole.
They lower a camera inside the engine room of the submarine, hoping to find clues. The two diesel engines are clearly visible.
There's a crab amongst the machinery.
Carl and the team continue to document as much as possible to help protect the archaeological integrity of the wreck. Nathan continues work on the port side propeller to see if an identification can be found.
Nathan scrapes away at the propeller.
I said UC, and you look like you said...
Res.
Again?
Again.
No.
But UC Res.
Yeah.
But there is a number underneath, 638, I think.
Under Res?
Yeah, directly underneath it.
Okay.
638, and it's got, like, almost a nice, like, a Creed Marine stamp on there.
So, right. Okay.
So we can go off that.
And maybe get some information.
But other than that, exactly the same as the other one.
Okay. If they both props say Res,
yeah,
as in reserve props, then that's all we've got, so...
They send their findings to maritime archaeologist Thomas Turmut.
Thomas reading at his desk. Search year 4.
The following season, with instructions from Thomas, they inspect the torpedo tubes for a serial number. The portside torpedo tube lies on the seabed, but there's nothing.
Crustaceans and plant life have been scraped away.
However, the torpedo tubes do reveal that they are still loaded with torpedoes inside. If this is UC-18, then the Lady Olive must have been destroyed by gunfire. Thomas's final instructions are to check the locking nuts of the propellers for a serial number. But unfortunately, these also reveal nothing. The team turn their attention to the other location and the shipwreck that they believe to be the Lady Olive. It is just a few miles from the submarine site, but at 76 meters deep, this will be the deepest dive of the project so far.
A diver swims towards flashing lights.
The ship is of the correct era and the correct size. It has two boilers, and the hull plating matches that of the Lady Olive.
One diver shines a light inside the disintegrated hull.
The ship is also upside down, something common with sinking Q-ships, as they were top-heavy due to the added guns and limited cargo. but this also means that many other clues are buried under tons of wreckage. Now that both wrecks have been located, Thomas reviews hours of footage from the submarine and compares it with historical accounts of the battle.
Looks like an impact hole in the ballast tank.
Thomas is looking at his laptop.
This could be damage from the battle. Yeah, we obviously see that the metal is bent inwards. This kind of damage would be fatal to a U-boat because she couldn't submerge anymore. And there's a large scattering of shell cases, and there's actually shells without a head, so it means that they have been fired. There's a shell here with a head, so there's used and unused projectiles.
He carries on studying the photos.
The exterior features show the submarine to be a mine-laying UC-class boat. The mine chutes, the outer torpedo tubes, the deck gun, and twin propellers confirm this as a UC-2-class submarine, and in all likelihood, based on its position and the position of the Lady Olive, that this is UC-18.
An aerial view of a monument with an eagle statue.
Now that the work is complete, Thomas notifies the German Navy and the French Maritime Archaeological Service of the discovery. Carl travels to the Submariner's Memorial near Kiel in Germany to make a record of the official names of those that were lost with UC-18.
Holding an umbrella over his head, Carl gazes at the long list of names on the memorial embossed on metal panels. Henrietta's on the phone to Carl.
I can confirm that your great-uncle James Simpson's accounts of the attack were all true because The damage that we found on the submarine matches up exactly as per their accounts.
Oh, it's just like the diary then. Everything was the same as the diary.
The damage that we found on the submarine and the locations of both ships does clarify and confirm that the Lady Olive did sink UC-18.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you.
One of the incredible things about this project is that we were able to prove the valour of the crew of the Lady Olive, who all survived this battle and removed any shadow of doubt over them sinking UC-18. But also, we have to appreciate that we've discovered a war grave. UC-18's location was unknown for over 100 years. In honour of that, we're going to lay a plaque on the sub with the names of the 28 submariners that were lost.
At the seabed, the divers chain a metal plaque with the names of the submariners to the gun turret. During the First World War, approximately 40,000 British Navy personnel were killed. Approximately the same number of German personnel were also killed. Statistically, you had only 35% chance of survival if serving on a submarine in the seas of Northern Europe.